All right, welcome to Making the Argument. Before we get started, I have a very important announcement. We have a brand new deal with GoodRanchers.com. That's right. If you go into Good Ranchers and you use promo code Nick and you sign up for one of their subscriptions, you're not only going to get $15 off, but do you remember the old deal where you got 2 pounds of ground beef with each order? Well, we just upped the game. That's right. You can choose top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon now. Every single order you get on that subscription is going to come with free top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, or bacon. You get to choose which one if you use promo code Nick. And again, $15 off on top of that. That's a savings of $480 in meat by signing up for one of those subscriptions. Not to mention the fact that if you are looking for a gift for someone that is impossible to shop for, you can go on to goodranchers.com and get one of their brand new gift boxes. Now, this is a limited time only offer. It's part of their overall Black Friday special. So go on to goodranchers.com to get more details. Sign up for promo code Nick in order to get that deal, and let's get on with the show. Hello and welcome back to Making the Argument. Today we're going to be discussing why it is that one senator is now potentially standing in between you and your gun rights, right? That's pretty much all it takes at this point. And that is because of the Senate procedure known as the filibuster. So if you've ever seen Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, then you've got this idea in your head on what a filibuster looks like. It's when a senator gets up there and talks so long that they essentially run out the clock and a bill can't be heard. All right. And that's where we're at right now. And it's not just about whether or not a particular senator is going to conduct a filibuster. It's the fact that Democrats are so mad that they can't pass the anti-gun legislation that they want to pass. And now they're talking about getting rid of the institution of the filibuster, right? And this is problematic for a number of reasons. I mean, the most obvious reason is that if you actually care about your gun rights, well then yeah, it's problematic that the Senate is actually considering this legislation in the first place. But the idea that because you don't have the votes you need in order to get past the Senate process, we're just gonna throw out a hundreds of year old institution because it's no longer conducive to our policy. And this actually extends into a lot of other areas as well. But let's refresh everyone with what exactly they're talking about. So obviously there was 2 anti-gun bills that came out of the House. One of the bills, you know, is a lot more wide sweeping, you know, attack on your Second Amendment rights. The other one is what they like to refer to as the very common sense background checks, right? Universal background checks. Now, we talked about this a couple episodes ago. Whenever they say universal background checks, what I want you to hear is universal gun registration, because that's what they actually want. And the reason why you know this is because you can't enforce universal background checks unless you have universal gun registration. And spoiler alert, the only way you can get to the sort of gun confiscation policies that the Democrats are all talking about down in New Zealand right now is if you have universal gun registration, right? The government needs to know where the guns are before they can really threaten you with respect to taking them, right? So that is what they're actually after. What they're selling with universal background checks is this idea that, well, look, you can own a gun, but if you do, you've got to go through this very simple process. That is not what they're after, right? And you know it's not what they're after, because when they're being very honest, whether it's Beto O'Rourke saying, yeah, we're coming after your AR-15s, or whether it's people on the left talking about gun control and just praising New Zealand. How wonderful was it in New Zealand that essentially by executive action, she could just come in and ban certain guns and they could go and take them, right? Problem solved. We don't need a long process of debate or discussion where multiple perspectives are heard with respect to the infringing on a very important civil liberty. No. We want a wise, powerful executive that can simply take things away from you whenever they decide it's dangerous. Right, and that is one of the many reasons why they don't like the filibuster. Now, here's what's interesting. Democrats have liked the filibuster in the past. And the reason why is because when you're in the minority party, you tend to like the filibuster because it actually gives the minority party some power with respect to what can get passed out of the Senate. But if you're in the majority and you just want to ram things through, well then, gosh, this filibuster poses a real problem. So why do we have it in the first place? Because there are a lot of people that are not necessarily far left that wonder, why do we have this, what they think is an archaic process whereby a minority party or a couple senators can hold up an entire vote, right? So a majority of the Senate wants to do it, but you can't do it because you don't have the 60 votes necessary in order to get to cloture, which is to basically close debate and then force a vote, right? And a lot of people look at that and say, well, you know, hey, that kind of makes sense. I will tell you, I was asked about this when the Republicans were controlling the Senate and our side was having a hard time getting certain legislation passed that we wanted. I was asked, should we get rid of the filibuster? And my answer was no, because I don't like the idea of the government being able to do things quickly, especially when it comes to taking away or infringing on your rights. When it comes to taking your property, I don't like the government to be able to move quickly. George Will said it best when he said that, you know, political gridlock is not an American problem. It's an American achievement. Because if you go look through history on when governments are moving really, really quick, chances are the executive has way too much power and they are railroading over things, railroading over your rights, your property rights in order to get what they want. So we don't want that in the United States. That's why we have a system of checks and balances. And it's why the filibuster is a part of that process within the United States Senate. Now, does this mean that no bill ever gets to be voted on as long as one person in the Senate doesn't like it and stands up and doesn't? No, right? They've tried that before. Sometimes they've been successful. Other times they haven't been successful. But even the filibuster has its limitations on what it can actually achieve. Now, like I said at the beginning, the filibuster is not one senator standing up there and speaking for 24 hours straight, right? That's not what a filibuster is. That used to be what it was. It was a talking filibuster. All right, but there was a compromise that was struck, and here was the compromise, because the problem was is the way that the filibuster used to be set up as is that if a senator got up there and was willing to do it, talk for that entire time and continually do this, then a bill could never come up with a vote, but every other bill that was behind it in the queue also got held up. And they said, well, look, this isn't productive. We should be able to get to the things that we agree on or that there's consensus on or that nobody's going to filibuster. So they came up with a compromise system that said, if you don't have 60 votes in the Senate to stop a filibuster, right? It used to be 67. They changed it to 60. If you don't have 60 votes to stop a filibuster, then what we're going to do is we're going to take that bill that has the problems, we're going to move it to the back of the queue, and we're going to let the other bills continue to go forward. That way, the people that have some issues with the bill have a chance to work on it, and we're not holding up the entire work of the Senate, right? That sounds like a pretty reasonable compromise. Right, but even that's not enough for the left now that they're in control of the Senate, right? They just want to get rid of the filibuster altogether, right? And what hill are they choosing to die on to get rid of this, you know, ages-old institution? You know, gun rights. Just take away your gun rights. That's what they've decided to do this on. Now, this isn't the first time, because again, the Senate can make its rules. This isn't the first time that the Senate has chosen to either suspend or modify the rules with respect to the filibuster. All right. What was interesting is I'm old enough to remember that when the Republicans controlled the Senate and there was a problem with judicial appointees, right, the left was up in arms. They were furious at the idea that Republicans would essentially try to ram it through by getting rid of filibuster rules. And so the Republicans did it. What happened? Well, Democrats ended up taking control of the Senate. And what did Senator Harry Reid do? He suspended the filibuster for the purposes of judicial nominations. And I remember Mitch McConnell saying at that point in time that if you do this, if you get rid of this process that has been a part of the institution and the way that we do business in the Senate, you are going to regret it. Well, guess what? Republicans took back control of the Senate. And when Trump was the one selecting judicial nominees, Mitch McConnell was like, all right, we didn't set up this rule. You set it up. But if this is the way you're going to do business, well, then it's going to come back to bite you. And that is exactly what happened, right? Democrats were furious at Trump's judicial appointees. They were furious that he got to appoint three Supreme Court justices. Well, yeah, it might not have happened if you had actually had some respect for the process. But more and more, this is what we're seeing. On one side, you see a lack of respect for rights like the Second Amendment and why the Second Amendment is important. I'm not going to go through the whole process again. We talked about that a couple episodes ago. But on one side, it's this idea that, you know, no private citizen should have a gun or no private citizen should have what they call an assault weapon. And again, you know, their definition of assault weapon is not what most people would consider an assault weapon. It's not a fully automatic weapon. All right. But it's this whole idea that no, really the government's the one that should have the guns. The government's responsible for providing for your safety. Well, I mean, just on that front, if you want to argue that guns are dangerous and therefore the government's the only one that should own guns. Okay, well, I've got a quick question. what's the government's track record for using weapons? Because last time I checked, every major atrocity in world history, just about every single major atrocity in world history, was not perpetrated by private citizens with guns. It was perpetrated by a heavily armed government against an unarmed population. Right? So if your litmus test for whether or not an individual or an institution should have guns is whether or not they will use them in an inappropriate or evil manner, well, I got news for you. The government's got some splaining to do because they've got the perhaps the worst track record. Right? So I'm not saying that the government, obviously, you know, we shouldn't have a military, we should have a police force. I think we should have those things. But I think it's ridiculous that you would tell private citizens that it's too dangerous for them to own it when it's governments that have the worst track record on abusing weapons. So that's the first issue, right? That's the substantive issue with respect to the bill. The reason why the process matters, and I get it, right? This is the point in the podcast or the YouTube video where you want to check out, because who likes to talk about process? Process matters. It is important. It is what is so unique and special about the United States is that we have these very specific rules, these duties and authorities that government has, right? And the articulation of rights that citizens have, right? Because that's the difference. The government doesn't have rights. The government has authorities. We have rights. And part of the way that we constrain government power and keep it from getting out of control is that we have checks and balances within our system. And this is not, if you think the filibuster is the only thing the left is upset about right now, I would encourage you to read up some of the recent articles I've seen coming out of the left, it's always out of the left, on why we need to get rid of the Senate, right? The Senate as a whole. Why? Because it's undemocratic. Newsflash, we are not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic. Right, the founders looked at democracy. It wasn't as if democracy wasn't considered. Democracy was considered as a system of government. What they found is that you end up with a tyranny of the majority. And so the way that we devised our government, the way that our founders devised our government was built around this idea of checks and balances, of federalism, of having a written constitution. This is important. You think of other free countries like the UK. The UK doesn't have a written constitution. We have a written constitution, a legal document that tells the government what its boundaries are, what it can do, what it can't do. And I've heard people recently say, well, Joe Biden won the election. He has a mandate. And if he's got to sign executive orders or if they've got to get rid of the filibuster in order to get through what they want, well, the people have spoken. Again, not the way our government is set up, right? Joe Biden got elected president. He didn't get elected dictator. Chuck Schumer got elected to the U.S. Senate. He didn't get elected to be dictator of the Senate. And when you start tearing down elements of our institutions, which set out the rules, right, the left and right limits on what you can do, you might like that a lot when your party's in power. I promise you, you're not going to like it when the other party's in power. And so why does the left want to get rid of the Senate? Well, there's a little popular meme that they put out, and it shows California and Wyoming. It says California, you know, 39 million people, two senators. Wyoming, you know, a few hundred thousand people, two senators. That's unfair. Well, last I checked, California didn't have a problem with that when they had a much lower population. The United States is not just one country. We're not just a republic. We are a republic of republics. Each individual state is also a constitutional republic. It's a requirement of actually joining the United States. And the reason why we have institutions like the Senate is because there was a balancing act between popular will and the will of the individual states. Because if a state was going to join the Union with the knowledge that population was going to dictate everything, why would you join? Why would you join as a state to an institution where you were going to be immediately railroaded by every other state with a larger population? Nobody would do that. Right? The European Union has problems because they're trying to negotiate this issue with different countries operating within a common legal framework. Right? We didn't want that. We set up a balance where we said, look, a majority of like things like budgeting, budgets have to originate in the House. Why? Because we're being respectful of the overall population. But by the same token, states need to be able to have a say. Why do we have a House and a Senate? Because we want a deliberative process for looking at legislation. Why do we have a filibuster? Well, because it acts as a final stopgap when you have a portion of the population, when their representation thinks something is so bad that it requires additional deliberation or it needs to be modified. It's a final stopgap within the legislative process on the Senate side in order to make sure that that can take place. But if every time you can't, force through what you want on the American population, you're going to start getting rid of institutions upon which our government is built, upon the processes by which we decide what should be a law and what should not be a law. And in case we've forgotten, the reason why this slow deliberative process is so important is because the government doesn't ask you to do anything, right? I know politicians love to say that. All we're asking is if people would pay a little bit more taxes. All we're asking is for gun owners to do this. They're not asking you anything. They're creating laws. And laws come with consequences and punishments. What they're really saying is, we're about to tell you what you have to do. And if you don't do it, we're going to punish you. We're going to deprive you of property. We're going to deprive you of liberty if you don't do what we say. And what's amazing to me is that the very thing that they're pushing for with these background checks and everything else, like the more stringent gun laws, it's not as if we don't have areas in the United States that have more strict gun laws than other areas within the United States. Chicago has far stricter gun laws than rural Virginia does. How's it worked out for Chicago? Right? Has it worked? That doesn't even matter anymore. It doesn't even matter that it hasn't worked. You know, Chuck Schumer talks about how proud he was to carry the Brady Bill legislation. There was a pro-gun control professor that conducted an elaborate study here in Virginia. And this is a guy that supports gun control, supports the Brady Bill, that said that the Brady Bill has produced no statistically relevant evidence that it accomplished anything that it set out to actually do. Does that ever give the other side pause? No, it doesn't. But it's not just that it doesn't give them pause with respect to the sort of legislation they want to push. They are so committed to it that they are willing to get rid of important processes and institutions upon which our republic is built. And that's why, I know the filibuster doesn't sound like an exciting topic, but I think it's really important for people to understand that process matters. The ends do not justify the means like this. The whole system of government we have built to ensure individual liberty, private property rights, free exchange, is dependent upon those processes. The processes are not an afterthought. It is dependent upon that because the moment you have a significant portion of the population, which is no longer convinced that the very institutions by which we pass and enforce law is following a consistent or logical process that is designed to take into account their concerns, not just the concerns of the majority, the moment they no longer have faith in that, you do not like what is going to happen next. And we are moving in that direction. We saw it with election integrity. And the left can say that the only reason why people have a concern over election integrity is because of big, mean conservative outlets and politicians that have shed light on it. No, the reason why there was legitimate concern was because here in places like Virginia, like a month in special session through the budget, not even through the normal process, they passed a bunch of new election laws which completely changed the rules. And now we're seeing it with trying to get rid of the filibuster. And we're seeing it with another movement within the left to try to get rid of the Electoral College. And we're seeing it with another movement in the left to try to even get rid of the Senate. Because yes, if you're operating this off of this idea, this notion that whatever the majority wants is good, and so therefore it should happen, and if there's anything stepping in the way or slowing down the process for the majority to get what they want, therefore we should get rid of it? Well, that particular system or approach to government has been tried in other places. I encourage you to go and look at it. See if you really like the results. So process matters. And it is an integral part of to how our country was set up in the first place. There is a reason it was written down. so that everyone would know the rules, so that everyone could compete with respect to what legislation should pass, what legislation should not pass, so that if you get something that the majority may want, but there's still problems with it, there's still a mechanism to slow down that process, have a good discussion about how something can potentially be reformed, so that before we impose something on 330 million Americans, we've got a good consensus behind that. And a good consensus is not 52% of the vote. A good consensus is not 55% of the vote. A good consensus is when you have an overwhelming majority of Americans that agree that, yes, this is something that is so fundamental to the United States that it should be done and that it should have power and authority over all of us. But, you know, again, this is the direction that we're headed. And I would encourage you to talk with your kids about things like this, about why the process matter, about why the ends don't justify the means, about why means are important as well. Because without proper means, you will be shocked at the perverse ends you arrive at. And I actually believe in protecting minority rights. I actually believe that what this country ultimately stands for is not just democracy in its purest sense. It's not the idea of the majority rules as a tyrannical authority over everyone. What has always been the hallmark of the United States, what we've been built on, even if we don't always live up to it, but what we've been built on is the idea, the importance of individual liberty. And individual liberty requires constraints on government power. So if this issue is important to you, and if this underlying legislation is important to you, I would really encourage you to contact Senator Manchin's office out of West Virginia. Because Senator Manchin, Senator Sinema over in Arizona, they were two Democrats that said, look, we're not going to vote to stack the court. We're not going to vote to get rid of the filibuster. And there's some wavering going on right now. And the compromise that Joe Biden is trying to do is to say that, okay, you should still be able to have the filibuster, but it's got to be a talking filibuster. All right, Joe, if that's what you want to do, then here's what's going to happen. The entire legislative agenda is going to be held up while they filibuster this particular bill. So look, let's fight to protect the very institutions that defend our liberty and our rights. Let's not water them down because we have a simple majority that now decides that they're going to impose their will on the rest of us. That's not what this country is supposed to be about. Yes, we have majority rules when it comes to elections. Yes, we have majority rules when it comes to certain votes. But we also have very important protections within our system to ensure that we don't wake up one day in a world where your government can essentially do anything they want to as long as 51% of the voting public thinks they should be able to. That is not a free country. That is a tyranny of the majority. All right, thank you for joining us today on Making the Argument. Again, I want you to contact Senator Manchin in West Virginia, Senator Sinema in Arizona. And look, don't yell at them, don't be mean. Encourage them. They said that they would fight to protect the institution of the filibuster within the Senate because they understand the long-term consequences. They understand that if they get rid of it now when they're in power, they might not like it so much when they're not. So call them up, encourage them. Encourage them to stand by their word and to protect the very processes that are there in part to help keep us free. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you on our next show. Once again, thank you very much for listening. If you want to support the show, again, one of the best ways you can do it is by heading over to goodranchers.com with promo code Nick. You're going to get $15 off. You sign up for one of those subscriptions and you're going to get up to $480 of free meat with that subscription. You get to pick top sirloin, salmon, chicken breast, bacon. It is all up to you. Plus, if you're looking for gifts to get for the people that are impossible to shop for, goodranchers.com also has gift boxes. You need to act quick. This is part of their overall Black Friday special. So head on over to goodranchers.com, use promo code Nick, and once again, thank you for listening.